Rise for the prayer by our chaplain, Pastor Gock, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag.
In the 15th chapter of Corinthians, we hear, "Therefore, my beloved, be steadfast, immovable, always excelling in the work of the Lord, because you know that in the Lord your labor is not in vain." Gracious Lord, we are thankful for your presence in our lives and the strength you give us to fulfill our daily tasks and for providing for our earthly needs. Help us to stay focused on you as we do our work and live through each day as your own. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. It's red sweater. It's snowing out there. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dempsey, Dixon, Emery, Holzman, Justice, Kevney, Kehoe, Kraus, Lager, Lamping, Lavoda, Libla, McKenna, Munslinger, Nasheed, Nieves, Parson, Pierce, Richard, Romine, Roop, Sater, Schaff, Schaefer, Schmidt, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson.
A quorum is present. The Missouri Senate is now in session. Secretary, read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, first regular session, 11th day, Tuesday, January 29th, 2013.
Senator from Newton.
Mr. President, I move for the reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though it had been fully read.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion, it shall prevail. Say aye. Those of the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Reading is dispensed with. Introduction of guests. The Senator from Cape Girardeau.
Mr. President, I'd like to introduce a special guest to my left and your right, very special friends of mine, and I know the presidents, Jay and Cindy Knutson. Jay is here for a gubernatorial appointment to the Southeast Missouri State Board of Regents. He's also the executive vice president of First Missouri State Bank and the mayor from 2002 to 2010. I'd like my guest to rise and be recognized by
the Senate. Let's welcome the guests of the senator from Cape Girardeau to the Missouri Senate. The senator from Cole.
Mr. President, I'd like to introduce some very special guests on behalf of the senator from Boone, who is actually tied up on a very important state appropriations conference call. These folks do represent people from all over the state. Mr. President, I'd like to introduce the Missouri Youth Ambassadors. It's a group of youth serving in our youth program. This program is a statewide youth council that works to prevent underage drinking and other substance abuse among their peers. With them today is Mana Laura, Missouri's Youth Adult Alliance Project Director for ACT Missouri. There's about 20 of them. They're seated in the gallery, and I'd like the Senate to make them feel welcome.
Well, all these guests of the senator from Cole and Boone, please rise for a welcome by the Missouri Senate. Senator from Barton.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a special guest here today. She's on to your left and my right, Janet Akers, who is the state vice president of Missouri Cattlemen's Association. She's from Clinton, and I would ask the body to make her welcome.
Will the guest of the senator from Barton please rise for recognition by the Missouri Senate? Senator from Polk. Introductions. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances, resolutions, concurrent resolutions, introduction of bills. Senator from Polk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Introduction of bill.
Send your bill forward, sir. Read the bill.
Senate Bill number 236, introduced by Senator Parson, an act relating to the Highway Patrol's motor vehicle.
Senator, introduction of bills. Senator from Barton.
Mr. President, I have three bills.
Send your legislative package forward, Senator. Read the first bill.
Senate Bill number 237, introduced by Senator Emery, an act relating to telecommunications.
Senator?
No explanation is necessary, Mr. President.
Read bill number two.
Senate Bill number 238, introduced by Senator Emery, an act relating to labor organizations.
No explanation necessary.
Read the third bill.
Senate Bill number 239, introduced by Senator Emery, an act relating to elementary and secondary education.
Explanation necessary, Mr. President.
Introduction of bill. Senator from Andrew. Send your bills forward.
They are on their way to the dais.
Read the first bill.
Senate Bill number 240, introduced by Senator Lager, an act relating to rate making for gas corporations.
Senator?
No explanation.
Read the second bill.
Senate Bill number 241, introduced by Senator Lager, an act relating to broadband.
Senator?
Thank you, Mr. President. We're going to continue to try to grow broadband in the state, even over the objection of the senator from the 15th. Thank you.
Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a bill.
Send it forward. Read the bill.
Senate Bill number 242, introduced by Senator Kehoe, an act relating to the sale or provision of certain commodities to seven director school districts.
Senator from Phelps.
Mr. President, I have a bill for introduction.
Send it forward. Read the bill.
Senate Bill number 243, introduced by Senator Brown, an act relating to the crime of sexual misconduct in the second degree.
Senator?
No explanation needed.
Introduction of bills. The senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business to report to standing committees. And I have a report from the Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, and Resolution Ethics to send forward.
Reports of standing committees. Send it forward. Read the committee report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics, to which was referred Senate Committee substitute for Senate Bills numbers 10 and 25, begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Respectfully, Senator Richard Chairman.
Senator from 23rd.
Mr. President, please refer Senate Committee substitute for Senate Bills 10 and 25 to the Committee on Government Accountability and Fiscal Oversight.
Shall be so referred, sir. Senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills for perfection.
Senate bills for perfection. Senate Bill 47. Senator from 24th.
Mr. President, I move that Senate Bill 47 with the committee substitute be taken up for perfection.
You've heard the motion from the Senator from the 24th. All those of the opinion that motion shall prevail say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary, no. Ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before the body. Senator from the 24th.
President, I now move that Senate committee substitute for Senate Bill 47 be adopted.
Do you care to explain? You've heard the motion from the Senator from the 24th. Senator, do you care to explain your motion?
Yeah, I move the adoption of the Senate committee substitute. What we did in the Senate committee substitute was simply to place one aspect of this bill in a different chapter. So, get to my notes. All we did was we moved the definition of relative. It was in, we had originally had it in chapter 210, and we moved it to 453.
Okay, you've heard the motion from the Senator from the 24th. Does any senator desire to be heard on the adoption of the Senate Committee substitute motion? Hearing none, Senator, you recognize close.
I close the adoption of the Senate Committee substitute, not on the bill, right?
Is this 47? Okay. All those of the opinion that motion, all those who are in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye. Those to the contrary, no. Ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You've adopted the Senate committee substitute. Senator from the 24th.
Great. Well, I'm really excited this morning to be able to discuss Senate Bill 47 with you all. I think it's the next step on a conversation we started on this floor Monday night. And really an attempt to try, it's an attempt to try to change the lives. Mr. President, if you could ask for a little quiet, please.
Let's get a little quiet in here so the senators can hear themselves think. Senator from the 24th.
Thank you, Senator, to my right. what we're trying to do is we're trying to really affect in a meaningful way the lives of those children that, for whatever reason, find themselves in a broken home, in a Division of Family Services. So what this bill attempts to do is it attempts to create a better way for those children. So let me start by just describing what children we're focusing on. So the children that are eligible that this bill addresses as far as eligible to receive aid to potential legal guardians are children who are under age 18 and who are in the custody of the Children's Division. And if you think about a child that finds themselves, they're under 18, they're in the custody of the Children's Division. They're in that system because if something's gone wrong in their permanent home. And if you think about what's their path out, there really are just four ways. What we all hope is that they can reconcile with their parents, with their family, and go back home. They can be adopted. They could actually age out of the foster care system, which is something we know has its issues. But there's a fourth way that a lot of people don't really truly understand, and that is they can become, they can attain a legal guardian. So when we think of legal guardianship versus adoption, you know, what's the difference and why does that come to be? Well, when a child's in the Division of Family Services, is in child services, before that child can actually be adopted, the natural parents have to give up their parental rights. And as you might imagine, that's a big challenge. The parents might be going through a rough part of life where they know they can't take care of their child, for whatever reason, but they're not willing to give up the hope that someday they could, and that's where a legal guardian can come in and play and have all the rights of an adoptive parent, but not actually be the adoptive parent. The way that this works now in Missouri, Missouri's law and federal law, is that both the state and the federal government provides a subsidy for legal guardians such that would incent them to play this role of the legal guardian. And what I'm trying to do here is expand the scope of what the definition of family is. But before I do that, I want to talk about the success that one specific agency has had in embracing a new system whereby they've been able to expand this universe of family and the success that they've had. So the Foster Adoptive Care Coalition is a group that attempts to place hard-to-place children in Division of Family Services. And what they do is they take that child into their process, and through the help of a lot of volunteers, they actually do this. They have a lot of retired law enforcement people, actually, investigators, and they go out and they try to find as many people that are directly or indirectly related to the child. So what does that mean to be indirectly related to the child? You could be, if my best friend were to pass away, I would not have a blood relationship to my best friend, but if I wanted to be a legal guardian to his children, I have a relationship to that family. The success of this program has been pretty awesome. The typical placement in children's services, when they place somebody into legal guardianship, about 25% of the time that'll actually work out. Again, these are difficult placements to make, and when the child and the legal guardian are not related by in any way, blood or family or friends, the success there is what it is. This approach to placing children into legal guardianship has resulted in over 70% retention with the placement. So the success has been very, very good. And so what do we know, and what do we know about children that are successfully placed into households where there's some relationship to they and their family history? What we know is that there are fewer placement changes, what I just alluded to. We know these are all documented studies. They're more likely to live with their siblings. And that makes sense. When you've got, you've got a group of siblings and you're trying to place them, it's much more likely that they may go with a great uncle or a godparent as whole. But when you're placing that child into families kind of one at a time, the siblings are split up. Children that are placed this way are less likely to run away. They're less likely to change schools. They're more likely to report that they always felt loved. They're less likely to reenter foster care. They're more likely to report liking those with whom they live. And they're more likely to report that they want their current placement to be their permanent placement. Let's talk about what basic subsidy services are available today to blood kin. And what those are, first, is a monthly maintenance, that this cash payment that goes to the legal guardian is no higher than what it costs the Division of Family Services to care for the child in the foster care system. So that subsidy goes to the legal guardian. It's the same or lower than it costs to keep the child in out-of-home care. It gives them access to Mole Health Net, same idea. These children are more often not in the Medicaid system. In the CHIP program, it doesn't have to go to Mo Health Net. If the legal guardian is employed and has their own insurance, then the child fits into that scheme. And there are daycare subsidies available up until the child reaches the age of 13. So what is Senate Bill 47 trying to do? What we're trying to do is we're trying to increase the incidence of this type of legal guardianship. It expands the definition of family member. So right now, like I said before, it's by blood. It's by relative. It would now include any relative by blood or affinity, marriage, or a qualified, close, non-related person. And again, remember, before this is finalized, it goes before a court. So it's not just anyone that can say, I think I know this child. He has to prove to the court that I have a relationship to this child in some kind of way. And so the idea here is to expand that definition to make these prospective legal guardians eligible to receive the subsidy. And this is a way, as we started on Monday night, of trying to create a mechanism, a way, an approach to change the lives of these children, to get them into closer to permanent homes. And with that, Mr. President, I'll take any questions.
Senator, would you like to make the motion for perfection?
Certainly. Mr. President, I now move that Senate Bill number 47 as amended by the Senate Committee substitute be declared perfected and order printed.
You've heard the motion from the senator from the 24th. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? The senator from the 14th in St. Louis County rises. For what reason do you seek recognition?
Mr. President, I'd like to inquire of the senator from the 24th.
Senator from the 24th, you yield.
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, I just wanted to start off by saying thank you for, again, offering this piece of legislation. I don't know if you listened to the conversation that I had a couple of weeks ago in regards to one of the state psychiatric centers for children in my district, about a mile from my home. I visited there in the last couple of weeks and talked to the director there, who is one of our state employees, and found that there are a lot of children who are in need of help, not only emotional, but they need family help. What's interesting about this facility is my great-great-aunt volunteered there for about 28 years, and she was fired when she turned 98, but she was a volunteer there, and she would talk about the need of these children having a hug and someone to talk to. And the director teased me a little bit and wondered if I was going to volunteer when I was 98 years old as well and get fired at the age of 98. But, you know, your bill calls into question, you know, how are our children in the state being treated? And I believe, as you know, that every single child deserves to be loved and have a very safe environment, and there are many kids who don't have that now. You and I also have something very in common as well, that we have integrated families that, you know, don't just look black and they don't just look white, but they are mixed. And I think you and I have a great appreciation for that. So I just want to thank you for your bill. I know that there are some questions that we did have in committee, but the testimony that we had was amazing. One of those people was a former staffer in the House. She started off with one child, Brianna, and now she has three children that she has adopted and she takes care of. And it's a beautiful thing when that happens. As was stated earlier this week, there are so many kids who are in foster care, but then there are so many kids who just don't have that infrastructure, that family infrastructure in place. And we want to do our best as legislators to give these young people an opportunity to grow and be loved, because ultimately they grow up, and if they do not have that family connection, whether they're blood related or not, they are at risk of getting into some potentially dangerous situations. And so I think that your legislation is a step in the right direction. It is something that we value in our community culturally, because we understand, especially coming from our community, that you may not be blood related, but you have to take care of your extended family, because it's part of your tribe. We're very tribal.
Senator, I thank you for your support and sharing your personal story, particularly about your aunt. I can tell that she mentored you well. You share her passion for service. And so, I thank you for your thoughts.
Yes, so thank you again, and I hope that everything just flies by well. Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? The senator from Barrie seeks recognition. For what reason do you rise?
To inquire of the senator from the 14th.
Senator from the 14th, do you yield the inquiry? She does. Proceed.
I'm sorry, Mr. President. I meant to say the senator from the 24th.
Senator from the 24th, you yield to the inquiry from the senator from Barrie. He does. Proceed.
You both look just as good. Well, I need to wear my glasses more, don't I? Senator, I just had one quick little question concerning close, non-related person. Would this be a foster child, an officially a foster child?
Well, I think what you're getting to is the eligibility of the child, right? Is that,
yes.
Is that what your question is?
Yes.
So as I started earlier on, so the child has to be in the custody of the Children's Division.
Right.
Okay, so and under the age of 18, so it's in the system now.
Okay.
It's not. It's not. I can't adopt a stepchild. That's not what this does. This is a child that's in the custody of Children's Division,
okay,
in the foster care system. That's the eligibility requirement for the child.
Right. So it would be really a foster child in the division of
yes,
the Children's Division of
yes,
the Social Services.
Yes.
So that's the legal. I was just trying to get that clear. Thank you very much.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? The senator from the 5th District in the City of St. Louis, for what reason do you rise?
To inquire the senator from the 24th.
Senator from the 24th in St. Louis County, do you yield?
I do.
He does proceed.
Senator, let me just say this. You have a kind heart. When we think about our children and our elders, we think about the higher being, because that's what we're supposed to be doing. We're supposed to be looking out for the children and the elderly. And for you to present a bill to the body of this magnitude is heartwarming.
Senator, I appreciate your kind words. It's really none of my doing. This came from the community. And you and I often get in front of our constituents, and we suggest to them that they bring us their thoughts and their ideas. And so I'm blessed to have members of my community come to me with this idea. What the Adoption and Foster Care Coalition is doing now is just extraordinary work, and I'm honored to be able to do my small part to just help them do just a little bit more.
You thank your community on my behalf.
I will, certainly.
Can you tell me approximately how many children do we have in foster care as of today?
In the Division of Children's Services, it's around 11,000, and so it's a pretty big number.
11,000?
That's right.
How many are waiting to on the roll to be adopted?
Well, each year there's about 1,200 adoptions that occur. Every child that's in the child services is not necessarily, you know, waiting to be adopted. It could just be that they had to leave their home for whatever reason. But no, that's the number, and the incidence of adoption need to occur more, but at the same time, this is a way, the legal guardianship path is a way for, you know, the biological parents not to give up their parental rights, and there's this hope that maybe if the legal guardian raises this child successfully during that time, the parent that was having a hard time in life, excuse me, have a glass of water, please. A glass of water. Yep.
Oh, wow. They bring glasses of water in here?
They do. The parent that was having a hard time in life, that maybe they get their act together, you know, and 5 or 10 years later, they're still a parent. They haven't given up their parental rights. And so maybe there's a reconnection that occurs with this child, you know, in adulthood. So, I mean, I'm a big advocate for adoption, but I also very much respect the fact that there are parents that would love to be great parents just for whatever reason, their circumstances in life are such that their child needs to be taken care of someone in their formative years, but maybe there's a reconnection later in life.
Do you know approximately how many of them are males versus females that are actually in the adoption?
I don't have that demographic at my fingertips, no.
So if I don't know where I can get the
data. I've got a lot of data, and you and I can share together offline.
Yeah, I would love to.
Great.
See the data.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you. You have my support.
Thank you.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on the perfection motion that's been offered by the senator from the 24th District? Hearing none, Senator, you're recognized. Close.
I close.
The senator from the 24th renews his motion that the Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 47 be declared perfected and ordered printed. As many of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is declared perfected and ordered printed. Staying on that same order of business, Senate bills for perfection. Formal calendar, Senate Bill 48, the senator from the 24th.
Mr. President, I ask that Senate Bill 48 be brought before the body.
You've heard the motion from the senator from the 24th. All those of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye. Those of the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before the body. Senator from the 24th.
Mr. President, I now move that Senate Bill 48 be we're on the perfection motion. Senate Bill 48 is a bill that we passed out of this body last year.
Senator, do you care to make the motion for perfection?
Yeah, we can explain. That's what I thought. I move that Senate Bill 48 be declared be perfected, taken up for.
You've heard the motion from the senator from the 24th. Senator from the 24th, do you care to explain the Senate bill? Proceed.
So Senate Bill 48 is a bill that we debated and passed out of this body last year. It's in the same space. It's in the adoption space. And what the bill does is that it removes the consideration of race in the final placement of the child. When the finalization of adoption occurs, there's tremendous discretion to the court. And right now, the courts can consider the race of both the child and the parent. And each, when you go and kind of understand each of the individual courts, there's a lot of different renderings of that opinion. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to accelerate the process of the finalization of adoption. What I shared to the group last year was my personal story that after we adopted our first adoption, our fourth child, we actually went down to the Division of Family Services and we were going to take the next step. At that time, we were very involved with an African-American church, the St. Alphonsus Rock Church. My children were baptized there and had their sacraments there. And so our next step was we were looking to adopt an African-American child. What we found out is a couple things. First, we found out the process itself required that my wife and I, who were, our oldest at that time was only 9, that we would have to actually go through the entire process of becoming trained foster parents together, the same period of time, and it was a 6-month commitment. That in itself seemed insurmountable with 4 children. But the other thing we found out at that initially and then over time was disconcerting was that the finalization of an adoption can take as long, typically takes somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 to 24 months. And what we learned is that depending on the court is that there's an attempt to try to implement this idea of having the races match the child and the parent. And so then that was enough. Actually, by miracle of God, if any of you remember the SARS epidemic, after we had come back from China, we were told, that's it, the Lampings are cut off, they have 4 children, it's not going to happen. And then with the SARS epidemic, a lot of parents dropped out of that international process, and that's how we adopted our daughter, Shelby. Not long after this whole thing happened, though, there was a single mom in my office. She happened to be white and in her mid to late 30s, and she decided to take up this challenge of adopting an 8-day-old African-American girl. And again, she's a single mom and just kind of a normal blue-collar working-class job. And she took on this challenge, and she brought that daughter into her home. And it took 23 months before that adoption was finalized. And you know, there's all kinds of anxieties that we all have as parents, the concern we have for our children. But the hardest part for her was knowing after she had kind of given her heart to this child that there's a chance that the child would be taken out of her home. And so this is not the be-all, end-all. This is the senator from the 14th and I had a good conversation last year about what this is not a great leap forward. This is just something that we can do that could, if it accelerates this process for my friend by 6 months, then that's a good thing. And so with that, Mr. President, I'll take any questions.
You've heard the motion from the senator from the 24th. Does any senator desire to be heard? The senator from the 5th District in the city of St. Louis, for what reason do you rise?
To inquire the gentleman, I'm sorry, the senator from the 24th.
Once again, Senator, there are no gentlemen in this chamber.
I think I corrected myself before you. Thank you.
Would you like to restate your reason you rise?
24th.
Senator from the 24th, do you?
Of course, I yield.
Yield. He does. Proceed.
Senator, you're putting this in place because right now it's about rates.
Well, right now, think about what a judge is trying to consider with a final placement. So it's the stability of the home. They've had a home study, all those things. But now, in statute, it says that they can also consider race.
And do you know why that was even an issue or put in place? Did you do any, you know, background information as to why was that even important?
I have no idea.
Gentlemen, I think it's important because of the culture. You know, sometimes children, especially African.
Senator, there are no gentlemen here.
I'm really trying to deprogram myself after 6 years of being in the House. So please forgive me, body. Senator, the children who was African-American and leave to be adopted by a non-African-American sometimes lose their culture.
I understand.
And they lose all of the history, the precious history of the African descent. And I think that that's probably one reason why, you know, they put that in there, so that those children could stay connected to the culture of their ethnicity, especially the African Americans, because we have a beautiful legacy. And a lot of times it's lost. And I just don't think that, I think that should be, that should stay a part of I think that area of this here statute should stay in place.
Senator, I understand where you're coming from, and to the greatest degree possible, I think I understand your perspective. My guess would be that this came into law long ago, when the confidence that we might have that we would become a society someday that would see beyond race. When you go to the St. Alphonsus Rock Church, you'll see a lot of white parents with African-American adopted children. When you are an adoptive parent of a child from a different culture, different race, you understand that the connection that that child will want to have. If they don't have it when you adopt them, you recognize the fact that over longer periods of time that they're going to want to seek out and connect to their culture. So as when you go and you talk to parents that have adopted children of other races, they recognize the importance of the cultural connection, and you'll find that they're extraordinarily proactive in ensuring that the connection remain. And this has a wonderful positive effect in that it introduces that culture to the parents as well. The senator from the 14th and I ran for office concurrently in 2010. That's when we met. And she came, and the senator from the 14th, her connection to the Asian American, the Chinese American community is very strong. And she was so gracious to reach out to my family and I and my daughters and to pull us into that culture. And it has had a profound impact on my daughters' lives. The parents that take up this challenge of adopting a child that's not of their race, they are a special breed. They understand the responsibilities they have to the culture of their children, and I would suggest they fulfill them so dramatically. The perspective I'm coming from is from that of an adoptive parent. And again, my friend Michelle, she waited month after month after month. And this daughter, the daughter that she took into her home, was 8 days old. And so I very much appreciate your perspective. I have a profound appreciation for the African-American culture. But what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to...
Senator, but they're eligible. I mean, they're eligible right now to adopt African-American children.
Right.
Is that correct?
No, the issue is the court has too much discretion in my mind to prolong the finalization of adoption because they're taking race into consideration.
So you think it's a hindrance for...
Slows down the finalization. What I'd like to see happen is I'd like to see a judge be as colorblind as you and I try to be and say, tell me the story of this child. Tell me the story of these parents. Is this child going to thrive in this household? And have that be the criteria by which the judge finalizes the adoption.
So why is it taking so long for the judge? You're saying it's based on...
No, I'm not. I'm saying that this can be a contributing factor.
Okay.
And I'm trying to I'm trying to eliminate it as a contributing factor.
Have you spoken to any judges to see if this is a contributing factor?
No, the people that I speak to are people that work in this process, the people that have either gone through adoption, that help facilitate adoption, that work in and around the family courts and Division of Family Services, and they all will acknowledge the fact that, depending on the judge, that it can be prolonged with the judges taking into consideration and hoping to try to find a match as to race.
I wonder, why do they do that? Why do you think they do that?
Well, I don't know why they do that, but right now they do that because they have discretion to do that.
Only because of discretion, you think that's why?
I don't know why they do that. Again, I can't speak to the mind of the judge,
yeah.
But I know that the judges can do that today. If we were to petition the court and say, what's taking so long, they could say, well, I'm taking race into consideration. I want the judge to say, if a judge wants to prolong the finalization adoption, I want it to be because there's something in the judge's mind that's wrong with this placement that has to do with the quality of the home into which the child might be placed.
Senator, I see where you're going with this. I would like to dig a little deeper in the statute and look and see who offered the statue whenever it was offered back in the days. I don't know how long you say it could have been, over 100 years?
I have no idea of the timing of when it was introduced.
To see, you know, what was the mindset and the logic behind, you know, putting that piece of provision in this particular statute.
Senator, that's always your prerogative, and I will just leave you with this. I think for us to get closer to a world in which we judge each other and perceive each other for the content of one's character.
That's what this is about. You know, I think
We're
on the same page there. So that you don't have to, you know, sell me on that there. I think that we're on the same page that race should never be an issue in determining if we're going to love each other.
Well, I think my point is to say,
however, I do believe that, Senator, at the end of the day, that individuals needs to stay connected some shape, form, and fashion to their culture. And I'm not saying that those that may adopt an African-American kid may strip them from that. I'm sure that they wouldn't learn about Marcus Garvey and Nat Turner and Harriet Tubman and W.B. Du Bois and all of those people. However, I don't think that that should be stripped out of the statute.
Very good.
Thank you. Thank you.
Is there any other senator's desire to be heard? The senator from the 9th District was the first on her feet. For what reason do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. To inquire of the senator from the 24th, please.
Senator from the 24th, do you yield?
I do yield.
He does proceed.
I'm sorry, Senator, thank you. Senator, I know we had discussion on the floor, I believe it was yesterday or 2 days ago, regarding the adoption.
On Monday, yes.
I'm sorry?
On Monday, yes.
Right. But I had not actually read the legislation at that point. So I may have to I'm not sure if I'm recanting or just clarifying my statements from Monday. What I did not realize at the time that the statute, of course, already clearly says that placement of a child in an adoptive home may not be delayed or denied on the basis of race, color, or national origin.
Right.
Here's where I am.
Okay.
I'm clearly of the mind that it should not be the primary, one of the primary barriers to a child being adopted that happens to be of a different race or ethnicity. Okay. I don't think I'm on board with it not being considered at all because of other cultural issues. Now, what I was not aware of at the time, because I had not actually read the bill, was that it is already clearly stated that it is not to be delayed or denied on the basis of race, color, or national origin.
And I would, Senator, and the bill is exactly the same as we debated last year.
I understand that.
Okay, and I would suggest that even though that's clearly stated in the law, that it's not, that's not how the court chooses to follow. That's a law that they choose not to follow. That, again, when you talk to people in and around this process, they will tell you that, depending on the judge, that they do take into consideration and they do make a conscious effort to try to connect children. Again, not all courts, but some.
Right.
They do try to connect. And meanwhile, you've got a family that has stepped up, is willing to adopt, has done all the things they need to do to adopt, and they're waiting while the judge exercises a certain amount of discretion. So the message that this would send back to the court is that no longer even though it's not supposed to be the sole determining factor for prolonging, I would suggest that the reason for the need for the fix is that in practice, it's exercised that way.
Well, and then there's probably, at some point then, where we will probably have to at least differ in some ways in this discussion. You know, I said the other day, I would not want that to be a primary consideration, nor would I want that to ever be a barrier for a family that would be a loving family to be able to adopt a child of a different ethnicity during that process. However, I don't know that it's prudent that it not be considered at all. You know, I strongly feel that there may be some consideration taken into account, but it should not be the primary consideration if there's a loving family that's willing to adopt the child.
So, and I completely understand what you're saying, and what I'm suggesting to you is that the courts, some courts, are essentially not following the spirit of the law, and by taking away that as a consideration, then we know that the message we send them is that...
Well, then, but would that be a problem then with the judges, or is that a problem with the statute? I mean, because I consider that then, if that's the case, if they're not following that the placement of a child should not be delayed or denied on the basis of race, color, national origin, then I don't see that being as much of a problem with the actual statute as I do the judges in exercising it.
Senator, I'm not an attorney, so I don't know how these processes work, but if what you're suggesting is that some parent is supposed to, you know, sue the court or appeal or file a motion for, you know, I think you're asking a lot of those parents. What you're acknowledging today is that judges cannot make it the sole factor.
Right, and I agree that it should not be the sole factor.
Right, and so if we eliminate race as a consideration in terms of our instructions to the court, then you're not taking away their ability to have it be a sole factor. You're not supposed to have it be a sole factor. So, you know, I think that we both get to the same place. You're saying that you don't want it to be the sole factor.
Well, I don't want it to be the sole, and it doesn't necessarily even have to be a primary factor. But to have the statute then read that it should not be considered at all is a little further reaching than I had originally anticipated. And
I understand.
Forgive me for not having read it before we had
this
discussion.
It may be that, you know, well, I guess what I'm suggesting is that depending on the judge, they're deciding to exercise their own discretion. That, I mean, they're judges. They know the law. They read the law. And they say, well, I'm going to exercise my own discretion in this matter. And if I decide to make it a really important thing, then I'll make it an important thing. So what I'm here to suggest is if we take it out as consideration, if that judge still has that personal bias or that personal sense of what he or she would like the outcome to be with respect to matching race, they can still, you know, ignore the law and exercise their discretion not to finalize.
So are you strongly married to the fact that it should not be considered at all?
I'm just,
be some gray area that it shouldn't be a primary or major consideration?
Right. No, I'm just trying, there's a problem that exists.
Right. I agree there.
Okay. And I'm trying to make it as clear as possible to the court, stop doing this. Right now, we tell them they can consider race, but it cannot be the sole determining factor why they don't finalize. I'm suggesting that some courts ignore that law. By us removing consideration of race, we are sending a very strong message to them. Place these children in homes that you think will be good matches, not try to match their race.
Well, I agree to some degree, and this goes back to this sole consideration or primary consideration or no consideration at all, which for me is more far-reaching clearly than I had intended to communicate clearly the other day. I would be in support of this bill if it happened to state that it would not be the sole or primary consideration in the process. That it should not be considered at all. Understanding how important cultural differences are or cultural heritage is to certain folks, whether it happened to be race or by race or ethnicity, I think is very much a part of who we are in different cultures and should be considered, but it should not be the primary consideration if there is a child that needs to be adopted. But I then don't want to ignore the importance of cultural heritage of these different ethnic groups, in the process as well. So, thank you. Senator, for the inquiry.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? The senator from the 10th District from Northeast Missouri, for what reason do you rise?
To inquire of the senator from the 24th.
Senator from the 24th, you yield.
I do.
He does proceed.
Good morning, Senator. I just had a couple of quick questions for you on this bill, and we discussed briefly 47 before we get started, and I didn't get to tell you my concerns with 48. I wanted to know, first of all, we passed this bill out last year. What happened to the bill?
It got attached onto something on the other side.
Okay, so it just happens what happens. All right, so it didn't make it through the entire process. I was telling you that this is the area of law that I practice. I represent kids in foster care. I represent foster parents. I represent parents when their children are removed out of their custody and put into foster care. I represent adoptive parents, guardian ad litem, the whole bit. This is all I do when I'm not around here. And I sent these two pieces of legislation, 47 and 48, to my colleagues that I spend all of my time at the family court with, and I asked them on 47 and 48, what do you think? Good, bad, don't care, whatever. 47, they were all thumbs up. This is absolutely something that we need. This is going to get more kids out of the foster care system into permanent loving homes. Go for it. They loved it. The second one, they universally had problems with it. And they threw out a couple of things that I wanted to discuss with you. First of all, they were concerned that it might take us out of compliance with the federal, Fostering Connections Acts and that sort of thing. Did you request for any analysis on whether or not this would throw us out of compliance with that for subsidies and that sort of thing?
I did not.
Okay, and I didn't either because I just got these emails, and so I have one concern that this might take us out of compliance. That, to me, is not a concern that we can't overcome.
Right.
Those sorts of things I'm happy to try to correct as we move forward.
Right.
But the second concern that they had is that by specifically removing this as an option, that there are some circumstances, or many circumstances, and by the way, I'm completely sympathetic to what you're trying to do, because I've seen the exact same thing happen.
So what you're suggesting is you know that there are times when a court delays an adoption because they're trying to match race.
Yes, and because of that, we have set in local rule in Jackson County, we've set very strict timelines. And we have a 90-day timeline.
You had to legislate a fix to the fact that the courts were, in fact, slowing down the process.
Well,
that's what you just said.
Yeah, I mean, the courts, I would say the process was slowed down because we're talking about two things that are incredibly important. First of all, a lot of times this is all tied up with the termination of the parental rights of the biological parents.
Yes.
And termination of parental rights of biological parents has been called over and over again the civil death penalty. Because in my opinion, and I would suspect just about anybody else's opinion, the absolute worst thing that could happen to a parent is to be told, these children are no longer yours.
Amen.
You have no right to them whatsoever. I mean, it's the final thing. Now, I would say 99% of the time that the termination of parental rights happens, it is absolutely in the best interest of the child. This is a parent who has either, because of one horrific act or a lifetime of trauma, has caused so many problems for this child that there's no reason, and they definitely should terminate the parental rights. But it's still a long, drawn-out process because we are essentially taking away parents' rights.
Right, I think when you look at the time it takes to, you know, less than about 10 or 11% of adoptions are finalized in that first year, and a lot of it has to do exactly to what you speak.
Right, right.
Okay.
And I would love to talk about efficiencies to, in appropriate manner, speed up the process, but I also, having represented now dozens of parents whose children have been removed from their care, I'm also acutely aware that we need to make sure that we do this in a very slow and deliberate process.
Right, and that's not what I'm trying to
speak
to.
I know. And a lot of these kids, frankly, that you're talking about, the termination of parental rights has already taken place.
Exactly.
And these are kids that are being held up, their permanent, safe, loving home is being delayed for whatever reason. Here's my concern and the concern of my colleagues in Kansas City. We've had several cases over the last few years where we felt that the child's race or ethnicity, while it should not be the primary factor, should be at least considered. And let me give you one quick example. We, and I think you in St. Louis have the same situation, in Kansas City, city have a pretty large immigrant population.
Yep.
We have a lot of Sudanese families, Ethiopian families, families from all over the continent of Asia. I mean, we have a big immigrant population. And from time to time, families within that close-knit community, their children are removed from their care because of mental illness, because of death, you know, whatever. And you've got a child then who's in the foster care system. And a lot of times we have families who, you know, immediately the child is placed with a foster care family.
Okay.
And the foster care family, you know, is providing a safe, loving home for this child. But we've had a situation, and my law firm actually represented, I think we were guardian ad litem for the child, where we had, for instance, two or three Sudanese children, I believe. They may have been Ethiopian. We've had two or three different. But after the child had already been placed in their emergency placement, a family from their community actually stepped forward and said, we want to be the foster parent for this
right.
child. And so they went ahead and started taking the classes and everything that they needed to do. They felt it was very important. These children had actually been raised in the Muslim faith and in their cultural community. And the community had decided it was very important to them that they, you know, be placed within their community. And so what happened, Senator, was because it was taking quite a bit of time, the foster family, in the meanwhile, is bonding, obviously,
right, right,
with
exactly,
this child.
Exactly.
And so we felt, though, that the court should at least take into consideration, because then an adoption, what we had then were dueling petitions
right.
for adoption, where you had the family who'd been fostering this child for several months saying that they should not take this child's cultural and ethnic and religious background into account. And then we had members of their own community saying that it should at least be considered as one of the factors when you're looking at best interests of the child. And my concern is that in those situations and other situations that have come up where we have advocated on behalf of, you know, similar situations involving the Orthodox Jewish faith and other faiths, that if we take racial or ethnic completely off the table,
well,
then those,
that,
those
not,
considerations can't be made.
Right,
and I think
but
we have
not,
to make
it's not
those
ethnic. It's not. In your example, it could be language, it could be religion, right? Those are the considerations the courts are trying to make, right?
They could, yeah, absolutely.
And by taking race out, it doesn't take those considerations out.
No, but I don't think that we should take race out. Those
okay.
are two, you know.
But I'll suggest this. The first concern you have is one that I think deserves attention. So I'm more than comfortable laying the bill over to pursue to better understand what impact this might have with respect to this law fitting in with federal oversight and concerns. And so, at the very least, this bill deserves to be laid over to take that up. So I have no problem with doing that now, laying the bill over to go pursue your concerns. And in the meantime, it gives us plenty of time to continue this conversation off the floor about the other matters. Does that sound fair?
Sounds fair.
Great. Mr. President, I'd ask that this bill...
Senator from the 24th.
Ask that this bill be laid over.
The bill will be laid on the informal calendar. The senator from Newton County... Senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Senate, without objection, will go to the order of business of announcements.
Announcements. Senator from Johnson is seeking recognition.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I ask what where we are on the calendar?
We are on the order of business of announcements, Senator.
Thank you very much. Your hardworking education committee will have a hearing this afternoon at 3 o'clock in the Senate land. May I inquire of you?
State your inquiry.
Are you going to be having an Economic Development Committee meeting before that in the Senate lounge?
The Standing Committee for Jobs, Economic Development, and Local Government will meet at 1 o'clock in the Senate lounge.
Do you plan to adjourn by 3 p.m.?
It will meet at 1.
Do you plan to adjourn by 3 p.m. on time?
We will be meeting at 1. We should be done by 3.
Thank you. Therefore, the Education Committee, the Standing Committee on Education, will meet at 3 o'clock in the Senate lounge. We will meet and start promptly at 3 o'clock. We are going to have a special guest, the Midwest Higher Education Compact. Their executive director, Larry Isaac, will be here, who is skating in from Iowa, and he will give us a presentation. So it'll be at 3 o'clock today.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Further announcements. Senator from Phelps.
Mr. President, I have an announcement.
Please.
Your Committee on Agriculture, Food Production, and Outdoor Resources will meet immediately upon adjournment in the Pershing Conference Room. Thank you.
Further announcements. Senator from the 8th.
President, I have an announcement. Your Committee on Ways and Means will be meeting tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. to hear testimony on tax policy. Thank you, Mr. President.
8 a.m. Further announcements. Senator from Newton.
Mr. President, no further business coming before the body. I move the Senate stand adjourned under the rules.
You've heard the motion from the Senator from Newton County. All those of the opinion that motion shall prevail say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. We are adjourned under the rules.